The Lean Berets reporting for duty. Fasten your seatbelts and hold on your carrots. You're about to enter the Lean Berets throwdown zone. Accelerating for the simple solutions. We are Avengers of Health. Hide the donuts. You're listening to the Lean Berets radio show at theleanberets.com. Welcome, Berets. I'm Ron Jones with Linda Finley from BodyFatTest.com, and we're Lean Berets, and we're going to do a very good show today on body fat testing for optimal health and lean mass. Not just body fat, but we're talking about overall health here today. So welcome to Lean Berets for the first time, Linda.
Thanks so much for having me here.
Yeah, you drove over from Camarillo, which is near Ventura, California.
That's right. Straight out of my swim, straight into your office.
Nice. Linda's a health professional that lives the lifestyle with sweat, not just talk, which is why she's on the show, because if she didn't do that, she wouldn't be here, right? So you've got an interesting bio. We're going to talk about you're a member of BodyFatTesting.com, that group. They're mobile hydrostatic weighing laboratories and trucks that are distributed around the country. You happen to have one of those trucks that represents Southern California, and we'll get into what hydrostatic weighing is and why does it matter and how does it factor into good health and maintaining muscle and caloric balance and all that jazz. But why don't you tell us, you know, what your background is, your certifications, and you're quite a swimmer too. I don't want to overlook that.
Thank you so much. I've been a competitive athlete since I was 8. So I'm about 35 years into competitive swimming. So that's my dominant wake up, gotta have it happen day. And but I've been in the fitness industry, of course, my whole life as well, and formally certified with ISSA in 2001. Mm-hmm. And have the basic certification for personal training. Mm-hmm. That they provide, and have expanded into endurance athletic training, as well as sports nutrition. Mm-hmm. So it's like a specialist in sports nutrition. So it's been very helpful, but I think most of my knowledge has come just through my experience with the people that I've been able to train with myself. And I've had many different people that I've trained with, like track and field athletes, as well as taekwondo martial arts people, bodybuilders. I have trained with so many different people. Of course, all my swim mates who are huge caloric fiends.
Oh, like Michael Phelps. We got exposed to that a few years ago. Wow, what a caloric load that guy has.
Well,
right?
Yeah, he's a ridiculous swimmer. I mean, he's so fantastic at what he does. And he needs the fuel to do what he does. He can't do it on nothing.
I think that opened up an awareness, though, in this country about calorie balance. And when you're really, really active, you have to eat a lot of food. Of course, a lot of people aren't very active, so they have the opposite problem. But it did create some dialogue, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that if you look at his performance on a world-class level, and then you can translate your own efforts into what you do, mm-hmm. Every day or every other day or whatever it is, you realize that if you don't eat, you can feel that in your own workout.
Right.
And imagine him trying to go and do, 7,000 or 14,000 meters in a day.
Right.
And trying to do it on very little food. He'll refuse to swim.
Right. He wouldn't get in the pool.
Yeah.
And you're a master swimmer, and you've been swimming for decades, and you've been nationally ranked in three different age groups. So, one thing I look at is, okay, well, you people have some trophies and some notoriety, but boy, if they span the decades and they're in it, I think there's some substance there, right? And I always start asking questions of those people, like, how did you do that for so long and remain on top of your game? So I think that's really impressive.
Thanks. Yeah, it's definitely something that has been the driver of my being. It's, you have to have a passion, mm-hmm. to be into it as much as I have. And a lot of people are into doing their sport. You're a cyclist.
Uh-huh.
You have that same passion.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you more than just physical fitness.
Right. Right.
It gives you a balance in your being.
Yeah, I need to ride my bike more this year too. That's one of my my own personal wellness goals. So the weather's changing, and I'll be putting that to test here soon. But one of the things that really intrigued me about you when we started working together, beyond what we've just talked about, is that when it comes to hydrostatic weighing and testing people, that you've tested over 10,000 people. And that was stunning to me when you kind of rattled that off one day off the top of your head. And I just really took pause and I thought, I've got to talk to this woman in depth. I've got to start interviewing her and finding out what she's seen over the years with that many people. And that's basically what this show is about, if you're listening. We're going to talk about hydrostatic weighing and what Linda has seen and what that profile looks like of that leanest person, and how'd they get lean and how do they stay lean, and more importantly than just, you know, body fatness or leanness is overall health. We want to make that point today. This show is about health, so is Lean Beret. It's not about a quick fix or something for the elite ultra-endurance athlete. It's about the general population getting healthier and managing their weight, and that's what this show is all about today. So hydrostatic weighing, you know, what is that?
Hydrostatic weighing, it's been around for at least 50 years, and it's based on Archimedes' principle, which is a displacement measurement. So we're looking at what you weigh on land, mm-hmm. and we're looking at what you weigh underwater, and hence the underwater weighing term. But based on gender and age and height and your land weight, we can pretty accurately determine to the nearest estimate what your body fat percentage would be, which would conversely give us your lean mass percentage, mm-hmm. which is really the point of the whole test.
Right. You know, we've tested, you know, my full-time job is corporate wellness, so I've had Linda in and we've tested over 100 of my clients so far. And while it's called Body Fat Test, and the website is bodyfattest.com, it's not really about body fat testing as much as it is finding out how much muscle you have and then how do we fuel that to keep it in terms of preservation, but also maybe even add a little muscle. And we're going to talk a lot today about the importance of adding muscle for ladies as well. Not that you can look like Arnold Schwarzenegger, because you won't, but you know, having some muscle is very, very important. I had my hydrostatic weighing test done at Cal Poly years ago, and you know, back in the day, you had to go to university or some kind of research laboratory to get that done. But now, you bring it out on a truck. It's mobile, and you can go right to the company's parking lot or the gym's parking lot or even a neighborhood can have you in. Like last week, you were in my area here in Valencia and tested some people in a neighborhood. So that's just so convenient, and it's really good news that that's available today. So why should people get hydrostatically weighed? What are they going to get out of that? What's in it for them?
Well, you know, one of the educational pieces that I always point out to people, and I call it a pop quiz when mm-hmm. they come through the door, but I'll ask them, do you know the definition of lean mass? And generally, they might get one component of it correct, which would be, oh, is that your muscle? Mm-hmm. And I'll say that's part of your lean mass. So,
right.
You know, when you look at the definition of lean mass, it's anything that's really metabolic by nature, mm-hmm. and it needs calories to function. So we're really looking at your skin and your bones and all of your organs and the function of those organs, as well as all of your muscle and the fact that, of course, it needs calories to function properly.
Mm-hmm.
So when people come through the door, that's what I try and draw their attention to, is that, you know, yeah, you're going to find out how much fat you got for sure, but it's really not the point of the test.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably the main thing that I point out when people come through. And initially, when people come in, of course, they're going to get a new baseline measurement.
Right.
So, you know, whatever they've experienced in the past, I just tell them that that's the past. This is today. You're going to get some really important data here.
Yeah, and good data as well. One point I, you know, learned through this whole process of working with you and testing a lot of people is that the data is very clean. It's accurate, and we don't have to guess anymore. It takes a lot of the guesswork out. You know, the BMI scale has been in the news a little bit just the last couple of weeks about how inaccurate it is. And, you know, we've suspected that for a long while, but the latest stuff is it's actually maybe underestimating some body fatness. So there are better things to do. And now that hydrostatic weighing is available in a mobile lab, it makes it really accessible to people. It's very cost effective. We're going to talk a little bit today about what exactly it is. You know, how do you get in the tank and all that stuff? But it's very doable. So when you get out of that test, you're going to have a body fat percentage, like Linda mentioned, but you're also going to have pounds of lean mass. And basically, for all practical purposes, we'll just call that muscle, but we know that it includes some other things as well. A key factor, though, is that RMR, resting metabolic rate, and that's something that people have not been clued into, and how important that is into the overall health equation in terms of calorie balance and also lean mass preservation. You want to touch on that real quick, the RMR?
Sure. You know, not only are you going to find out how much body fat you have and how much lean mass you have, but based on your lean mass number, we use the Cunningham formula for anybody out there that wants to look that up. But it's a calculation to figure out resting metabolic rate. And, you know, simply put, it's the amount of calories, that lean mass side of your body composition. It's what it needs to function at rest.
Mm-hmm.
So that does not include all of your activities in the day. It's just holding still.
Right.
And almost literally on your back, not moving, mm-hmm. excuse me, not sleeping or eating, just holding still.
Right.
So that's basic function. So when people get dialed in on what resting metabolic rate is, they'll put two and two together and typically say, well, I'm not eating that much.
Right. For example, I'm about 6 feet tall, weighed 163 pounds, I think, when I came through your test a few months ago. And my resting metabolic rate, that caloric value I need just to hang out on the couch and not do anything, is 1,838 calories a day before I go to work, before I ride my bike, before I lift weights, before I go hike, right? I need over 1,800 calories a day. So that was interesting. That's a very important number. We'll keep referring back to that in the show, because that really has a lot to do with promoting lean mass. Once you know how many calories you need, then you start thinking about, wow, if I'm not eating that many calories a day, what happens to my muscle? You want to touch on that?
Right. So resting metabolic is so important that you'll realize that, okay, if I don't take in enough calories and then go work out like a maniac,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to be forced into tapping into my lean mass for energy. I've mm-hmm. got to find something because I didn't give myself enough. So
right.
You'll realize that if you under eat below your resting metabolic rate, you'll end up losing lean mass over time.
Which is not good.
No.
Yeah.
So you're essentially feeding your fat
mm-hmm.
by doing that. So you might be a smaller person at the end of the day, but mm-hmm. you're not going to be a leaner person.
Here's another big concept if you're listening. We need to stop talking about overall weight and talk about what kind of weight. You know, because people talk about weight. It's like, well, I lost weight. It's like, well, if you lost muscle, then that's not good. You know, you might want to weigh more and have less body fat and more lean mass, and then that's health, right? But if you're losing weight at the expense of losing muscle, you're not really gaining anything in terms of health. You're losing ground, right? And so that you know, I kind of knew that before from my education and certifications, but I didn't have a street value of that until I really started working with you and seeing my clients come off the truck with their data reports and recognizing, you know, what their real resting metabolic needs were, and then talking to them in the coaching session and figuring out they're under-eating by hundreds of calories sometimes. Not everyone, but quite a few were. And more people than I thought were under-eating. That was interesting to me.
Right. People tend to under-eat only because they're guessing what they need.
Mm-hmm.
So they have no idea what they really need on just a real basic level.
Mm-hmm.
And once they understand that they need a certain amount of food just to hold still, then
right.
they start... It starts making sense mm-hmm. to them.
Yeah, I think, you know, testing all the women I've tested so far, they were ranging in a resting metabolic rate between, you know, 12-something and 1,500 calories plus a day, and the men were 1,600 to 1,900 calories a day, as high as 2,600 plus calories a day. So there's a lot of range there, but, you know, I'll give you a story. One woman that we tested, she was on a diet program, a national program. They had her in at 1,200 calories a day. Well, her resting metabolic rate was 1,500 plus. So before she even went to work and exercised, she was 300 calories in the hole over that. So we're talking hundreds and hundreds of calories off in the equation, you know, at the end of the day. And she was not feeling well, and her body composition was not favorable, and she couldn't figure it out. But after the test, it was pretty obvious what was going on and how she needed to change it. So that was cool. That was cool. See those lights come on in people.
Right. I often see people do a knee-jerk reaction. You know, they've overeaten for a long time, mm-hmm. and they've gotten big,
mm-hmm.
and suddenly they make a decision, okay, I'm going to stop this nonsense, and they take away way too many calories.
Mm-hmm.
So they end up, as you said on one of your other shows, metabolically shooting yourself in the foot.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, when you suddenly take away 1,000 calories that you used to have,
mm-hmm.
Your body's going to react to that.
Right.
So it's really not, often for people, it's not that big of a movement in calories, but they just have this iron will to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that weight word again that
right.
doesn't quite work, you know. So I'm constantly talking to people that, you know, what you really want to lose is fat. You don't want to lose weight. You want to lose fat.
Mm-hmm.
That's the verbiage that I try and
right.
get people to start big shifting to.
Big paradigm shift. If you get nothing else out of the show, think about, hey, you know, I want to lose weight. What kind of weight do I really want to lose here? And if you realize I need to lose fat but not muscle,
mm-hmm.
then it was worth listening to the show for 45 minutes or so, right? So that's what that RMR is about. It's you know, it's your resting metabolic rate. It's the number of calories you need to basically just sit on the couch, and that doesn't factor in your activities of daily living, which, you know, we were kind of just throwing out a roundabout 300 calories a day estimate for that. And then depending on how hard you're exercising and for how long, that can be, for most people, general population, 200 to 600 calories a day if you're exercising on a daily basis. And we start adding all that up and dialing it in. And, you know, for a lot of people, I think that's going to be a real big breakthrough. And you've seen that over the years with people. When they found that out and dialed it in, they started losing quote-unquote weight, meaning they lost fat weight and started maintaining or maybe even gaining muscle.
Right. Well, doesn't it make sense, though, if you feed yourself enough food to function,
mm-hmm.
that you wouldn't support extra body fat?
Right. Fat cells don't need a lot of energy to survive. They just kind of hang out. They'll plump up, though, if you feed them enough. Right? But muscle needs a lot of fuel. And here's another thing. If you skip breakfast or go too long between meals, you can slip into that starvation mode. So when you do eat, you'll store the food as fat, even though you might be eating some kind of lean protein. So another thing we learned, you know, and I've read this before, but the importance of meal timing, not going too long between meals, you know, maintaining that blood sugar level pretty consistently throughout the day without these huge variations and spikes. And we'll talk more about the lean profile as well, like what we found out, you know, going back and forth. I took a lot of notes on Linda, and I put it all on one page. And I'll hook that up on the website so you can kind of see what her leanest people end up doing and how they get there and stay there. But what's the process of coming in your truck? So let's say I don't know anything about hydrostatic weighing. I know I got to get under the water. What do I expect when I get in the truck? And, you know, how long does it take? And what's it cost? And what's the deal?
Right. Well, what we do is we work mainly with health clubs, but we're working more and more with corporate wellness programs and any kind of studio you can think of. But what we do is we set up the truck and have people come in, and it's a private test. So we have two private changing rooms, and what I do is get your information and put you into my computer as a new person. So we'll get your you know, some contact info, of course, and your height and your current height and weight. What we have people do is go ahead and get into their swimsuit. You're going to sit on the edge of our tank and spin around and hop into the tank. It's about 6 feet long, 4 feet deep. We actually have a little video of it on our website that people are welcome to go view at bodyfattest.com. But we have people have a seat in a face-up position, and I have people do several submersions, and you're submerged for only about 4 seconds. And the whole idea is to get rid of the air that you have in your lungs, because it kind of counts as a fat.
Right.
So your lean mass, of course, weighs different than your fat mass. So I'm trying to get your lean mass weight. It's denser than fat.
Mm-hmm.
So we have several submersions that we'll do. You know, 3 is probably the minimum. You know, maybe I'll have you do 5 because I want to get 2 repeatable weights, which is why this is such a gold standard measurement anyway, is because we can repeat and get a repeatable piece of information, which makes it more accurate as we go along. But you're in and out of the water in about 7 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I spend time with a review of your report and point out all the main points, which, of course, again, is your body fat percentage, your lean mass percentage, and the weights of those two items of your total weight, where you would fall in your age group and gender on a health scale, and kind of what we consider good for those different age groups.
And no guesstimating with a BMI. Now, body mass index, I mean, this is, they're going to give you a real accurate idea where you fit in that scale in terms of being overweight, obese, healthy range, right?
Right. And of course, I'll point out again what your resting metabolic rate is, which is a pretty good estimate of what you need doing nothing, you know, and I equate that number as to, you know, some people can really connect to this, but, you know, you're body is like your car sitting in the driveway with the engine on all day.
Right.
And you're just burning up that tank of fuel just sitting there. Mm-hmm. That's your resting metabolic rate. But if you want to go to the mall and back, you need to add fuel to go do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the point of that. And people make that connection pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
And
you use the digitized equipment too, because there are some people doing hydrostatic weighing with the spring-loaded scales, but you've got all the latest digitized equipment that you zero out each day, and the tank is also commercially filtered and treated, and the truck itself is very clean. So, you know, it's pretty nice setup. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the analog system is still used today in a lot of the universities. I think they're trying to redesign their tanks to incorporate digital like we have. But we have one of the only high-tech tanks like this.
Interesting.
But it's very fun. You know, we get a lot of people that tested 20 years ago and they say, wow, this is really cool.
Yeah.
You know, I can't wait to do this again.
Technology has arrived.
Yep.
That's exactly one of the cool things about it. So that's what it takes 10 to 15 minutes. And, you know, I know when I tested my corporate clients, we allowed 15 so we could have a little extra time of you kind of explaining it and we weren't as rushed. But once you get the test done and you're in the data base, then you can actually retest, and which a lot of people do that periodically every 4 to 6 months or so. But you can do that in like 10 minutes, right?
Yes, that's right. We keep a history of everybody that comes through, of course. Mm-hmm. And so when I pull your name back up and print up your newest report, it'll have all your past reports. So you can see your progress. You can see if you've gained or lost muscle.
Mm-hmm.
Since lean mass incorporates, you know, everything but your fat, the only thing you can gain or lose there is muscle. So it's a really nice view of what your gains or losses have been.
Mm-hmm.
So same with the fat side.
Cool.
Yeah.
Pretty clean process. So we're actually getting ready to do some retesting with my clients. It's been a few months, and they're pretty excited. And from a behavioral standpoint, it kind of motivates people. They get all jacked up about doing it, you know, and they really get motivated intrinsically to get it on and eat properly. And that's kind of like a caveat of doing the thing. It was a little perk, you know. It wasn't just the initial test, but they were immediately asking me before I even knew if we were going to have you back, hey, can we test again? You know, which is great. They're really engaged in the process. Most people, not everyone, but most of the people were, you know, really into it.
Right. You know, what I've noticed with people is that, and I'll encourage them to start thinking about this, the more they do it with me, is to reflect back on those testing dates and say, what were you doing?
Mm-hmm.
What were you doing on those dates? You know, and you can make a connection with what has worked. You know, because if you've made an improvement, then what you've done currently mm-hmm. is working.
Right.
So, you know, they can look back on that and make that connection that, okay, I started cleaning up my carbohydrate choices. I started picking leaner proteins. I mm-hmm. started getting it in every, you know, 3 hours or, you know, so they can make all of these little points and they started making their workouts more consistent. Because I always point that out to people that,
right.
you know, my leanest people are very consistent. They hardly change anything that they do. You know, their workouts are the variable there, but mm-hmm. their food and how they sleep and eat and get up and do it again mm-hmm. is very consistent.
Interesting. Which is a nice segue because now we're getting into a little bit more of the specifics about the importance of lean mass. So we have this test, we have these data points, now what? And you mentioned, hey, they're making some changes. So let's dig into this because this is the nuts and bolts behind the body fat test and using the data. Because the data is cool, but if you don't do anything with it, I mean, you know, what's the point, right? Mm. It's kind of a wow for a couple hours and then it doesn't mean much if you don't do anything with it. So the importance of lean mass, you know, we know if you have a good percentage of lean body mass, that it optimizes your health. And we're going to talk a little bit about, well, actually a lot of today about the importance of using protein and lean mass to manage weight more effectively. And this has been kind of coming out in the research the last few years, and I've been watching it develop. And I was pretty conservative in terms of weighting and watching just to make sure it was safe. And before I started talking about higher protein intakes, I'm not talking about high protein, but just higher protein than I was used to seeing with something like the RDA scale or standards. And also, of course, if we have optimal, you know, lean mass, muscle strength in our body and integrity, we're more apt to maybe prevent some injuries. And if we do get hurt, rehab as well. For example, if you fall or something, you can hold yourself together. But let's dig into this. The RDA estimates, basically, from what I understand, they go off total body weight, correct?
That's right. They incorporate your whole body, so it's not just your lean mass. It incorporates your fat weight as well.
So you're going to be estimating protein based off of fat, but not just pounds of lean mass. But if you have the hydrostatic weighing test, we don't have to feed fat cells, right? We can just look at the pounds of lean body mass and then get our calculations based off that.
Right. Over the years of doing this, it's become more apparent that, and it's just a simple concept, but why in the world would you feed your fat anything?
Mm-hmm.
Is my whole view.
Right.
You know, and those who don't feed their fat have all of these things that they follow.
Mm-hmm.
But protein is definitely a big... you know, a major part. It's actually prioritized first in my healthiest people mm-hmm. that come through. They pretty much know what they need.
Hmm.
They don't guess at all.
Well, you know, working with you a few months ago, I, you know, started getting into the amounts of protein and looking at these percentages of total intake. So, you know, what's your percentage of carbohydrate? What's your percentage of total calories each day with fat? What's your percentage of total calorie intake with, you know, protein? Those are those macronutrients, right? Fats, proteins, and carbohydrates. And the profile of your leanest people seem to eat about a 40-30-30 composition of diet, near that. So that means, you know, it doesn't mean you're there every day, but, you know, these percentages can grow or shrink depending on training load and need of the person. But they're going to be about 40% carbohydrate, 30% protein, 30% fat. And we've always emphasized when all the post-test coaching sessions and just our conversations in our personal lives with people that, you know, these are healthy fats, right? These are healthy lean proteins and healthy whole grains, not just going to McDonald's and getting a bunch of junk food. That's not what we're talking about.
Right.
Okay. But that was different. I got to tell you, you know, based on what I was taught in school and my original certifications with American College of Sports Medicine, that seemed really different. And like I said, I've been watching this develop for a few years and was resistant to jump into it because I thought, well, it must be a fad or, you know, but As you know, I went to the American College of Sports Medicine Health and Fitness Summit a couple weeks ago in Las Vegas, annual health fitness summit, very large conference type event. They bring many of the top people in the world to present, and they had a nutrition track as they do every year. And I decided to really, you know, prioritize attending a lot of the breakout sessions on nutrition, you know, because I got way more interested in it the last year, but especially the last few months working with you. And I was pleasantly surprised that basically, for the most part, everything we'd been talking about behind the scenes, they were reflecting that in the latest research updates. They were talking about the importance of higher protein diets for weight management and optimizing health, not just for athletes. It is the American College of quote-unquote sports medicine, but all those registered dietitians that are presenting are wellness people first. And they exercise daily, and they're talking about general populations, not just athletes. You know, I spent a lot of time saying, you know, you guys can use this for your personal training and corporate clients as well. You don't have to work at the Olympic Training Center to benefit from some of the research and knowledge that we are using with our Olympians. So that was cool. And that really, it really brought home to me the importance of taking that test data from the hydrostatic weighing and using that information to optimize health and manage body weight better. Because let's face it, I mean, with the increases in diabetes and obesity the last 30 years, something needs to change, right? The food guide pyramid that's so heavy in the carbohydrate, and maybe we need to rethink this, you know? I mean, really, and the RDA standards that have led us down this path of you know, at least partially, we can, you know, maybe look at that in terms of the low protein amounts compared to today. Maybe that's partially responsible for some of this weight gain or difficulty with people managing weight. I don't know. It's very interesting. What do you think on that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I'm so immersed with people and their habits when they come through my truck. Mm-hmm. And being the quizzical person that I am, I always ask what they're up to. What do they do for work? What do they do for workouts? You know, mm-hmm. of course, time permitting, but I can find out a lot about people pretty quickly.
Sure.
And, you know, I follow my lean. Of course, I'm going to pay attention to everybody that comes through, but my leanest people, they all share the same kind of rules.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, protein is a major part of what they do,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you can definitely overdo protein.
Oh, sure.
As well. And, get into some problems with that. But, you know, the ones that get it, they realize that the one thing that they get the most out of it is a recovery aspect, you know, because as I was telling you earlier, our workouts are really designed to tear us up.
Right.
So
break down.
Yeah. And most people who are listening to us, they are trying to be active. They're trying to, you know, get into better health, and they realize they need to move, mm-hmm. you know, we're supposed to.
Right.
And, but our workouts are designed to tear us up, and it's our responsibility to replenish that supply that rebuilds us.
Right.
And protein is your building block. It's not carbohydrates or fat. That's your fuel.
Right.
So we need to get a certain amount to help us recover and repair and even build stronger for some people, for sure.
Very important for recovery. You know, registered dietitian for the Olympic Training Center was there presenting, and she talked a lot about protein and post-recovery supplementation in terms of, you know, whether you're having a shake or just some kind of a solid food meal after your exercise session, not just for the Olympic athletes, but for the people, you know, in the gym, our regular clients too, that are exercising, and, you know, a lot of people exercise at a vigorous level. So she said we can definitely use this to optimize recovery. And again, this whole thing is about, you know, getting in Linda's truck or getting an accurate idea of what your lean mass is to fuel that properly so we can maintain your metabolic rate. Meaning that when you're sleeping, you're going to be burning up some fat for fuel, right? Because you've got a lot of muscle. And that's really important. Instead of overeating and fueling the fat or not, you know, fueling your protein, your muscle properly with protein, and then you're lifting like crazy in the gym and you can't gain any lean mass and you wonder what's happening.
Right.
You know?
You know, you have two ways to calculate protein requirements with the hydrostatic information. And
mm-hmm.
you can take the literal number of your lean mass, you know, if yours is like 150 mm-hmm. Pounds of lean mass, and you know what your resting metabolic rate is, you can either take a percentage of that total, the total calories that you need, or you can take your lean mass number right there and turn it into, you know, grams of protein. Mm-hmm. You can do 0.8 or 1.0 or 1.2, 1.5, as much as,
mm-hmm.
And create a, you know, a low end, high end of protein intake. You can have your day off type of intake, or you can have your day on that you really need more protein to recover.
Yeah. We're talking about the RDA and protein and all the emerging research here on protein coming out the last 5+ years. And one point that was made at ACSM by what I consider to be the top registered dietitians in the country, many of them were there, is that if you're a registered dietitian or even personal trainer, you know, we need to relearn protein, because a lot of this research has just been done the last few years. In fact, I've got a citation here. Let's see, since 2000, the year 2000, protein research has increased 40%. So just since 2000, right? And a researcher named Krieger did a meta-analysis in 2006, and he looked at 87 different studies over 59 years, that's since 1964, and showed that over 50% of the studies published have been published just since 2000. So, you know, if you learn what you think you know about protein in the 80s and 90s, man, you know, a lot of this research has been done since then. And that was kind of where I fit in. You know, I got certified with ACSM in 97, pre-2000. So a lot of the background I had on protein really is outdated, you know, just to be honest. And I had to get with the game here. So the RDA, you know, they take the low end of that range as 0.8 grams per kilogram of body weight. And again, they're talking about overall body weight, so you're throwing the fat in there as well. But when you come off Linda's truck or another hydrostatic weighing company or service, you'll have pounds of lean mass, and you can just factor those protein requirements based on pounds of lean mass. And so you're using a different range. It was pretty much reflected on what I heard at ACSM is ballpark about the same. And can you explain that a little bit? Because we're taking... let's see, it's 0.8 to 1.2 is your range of grams per pound of lean tissue, right?
That's right. I think over the past, well, since 2001, when I started thinking more about protein,
mm-hmm.
And this is before these studies, I guess, mm-hmm. I was already like understanding the importance of protein. And for me personally, I've always gravitated towards having meat of some kind, lots mm-hmm. of chicken and fish and mm-hmm. all of those things already in my existing food. But if you have, if you know your lean mass, it's a very simple calculation. But, and what I was taught is it, a gram of protein per pound of lean mass is a very good amount that works well for an active adult trying to lose fat.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much it. So, if somebody, and for what I've noticed too, is that if you add 0.2 to that, so 1.2 grams per pound of lean mass, you can help somebody gain some lean mass in a safer way.
Right.
And not overload them based on like total body weight. Right. It just didn't make sense to base it off a total body weight to me.
And here's something you mentioned before the show, and you'd go off total body weight and you don't have an accurate idea of lean body mass and pounds. Let's say a person's obese at 300 pounds, you can actually give them too much protein and get them into a danger zone, right? Because you don't have good data going into the equation.
Right. And what I've seen often, some of the other professionals out there, they will just ballpark it. They'll mm-hmm. guess, you know, they'll say, oh, you only need 1200 calories and we're going to take, you know, 20% of that from protein,
mm-hmm.
you know, so they're not only undershooting the caloric requirement, but also not giving you enough protein.
Right.
So you're going to end up losing lean mass. You might lose weight, weight.
Right, quote unquote weight.
Right, yeah. Initially, but what you end up losing is more lean mass than you will fat.
Which is never good. I mean, even with my ladies, I'm driving this home with them. You don't want to lose lean mass. It's a problem with people as they age. They lose lean mass, and then it's an injury issue if you fall and you don't have proper lean mass. So we want to get that muscle and preserve it. And really, from what I've learned and what I'm hearing some very high-end professionals talk about is that RDA value of 0.8 grams per kilogram of overall body weight is just enough protein to kind of prevent anemia and deficiency. But if you're training and trying to add lean mass, and especially if you're trying to lose weight, and quote-unquote body fat weight, right, it's not very optimal. I mean, that's what they were talking about at ACSM. So in replacement of the RDA, they talked a lot about something that I hadn't heard about before. It was the AMDR. And let's talk a little bit about what that means and how that relates to ranges. So AMDR stands for Acceptable Macronutrient Distribution Range. And basically, they've done some interesting research to show that most of the people in this country, if you look at this, the AMDR range of how to distribute these macronutrients, with protein, fat, and carbohydrates, on the protein side of that, they're at the very low end of this range. It's about, that RDA level. But what they're saying now, based on new research, remember, 50% of this research on protein has been done since 2000. So it's pretty recent stuff, right? Is that we're not getting enough protein. And I was taught differently. I was taught we were getting too much protein. I've coached my clients now where everybody's, getting too much protein. And that just isn't what the latest research is indicating based on what the updates I got a couple weeks ago at the American College of Sports Medicine Summit. So I want to lay that out. And these AMDR ranges, they're expressed in dietary reference intakes, which is generated from an expert panel at the National Academy of Sciences. So you have to go in the family tree back two or three generations here to find out where this stuff originated from. But it's a very high-end group of people that take a look at a lot of data, and everything is pointing us into the direction that, we really need to rethink protein and getting a little bit higher caloric value from the percentage of protein each day. And I'm saying higher. I'm not saying high protein, but basically, a lower protein intake is about 10 to 15% of total calories a day versus a higher protein diet, which would be 20 to 35%. And even Weight Watchers, very national organization for weight management, their ranges are based off of this AMDR, and their upper limit protein is 35% of total calories coming from protein. So, I started digging into this, like, wow, it's out there. It kind of slipped past me there for a year or two, but I'm glad I'm on track now. And so if we break down the AMDR macronutrient ranges, they're talking about protein being 10 to 35% of your total caloric intake. Your fat category is going to be 20 to 35%, and carbohydrates going to be 45 to 65%. And that is reflected in what you found with your leanest people, 40-30-30. And one thing I want to point out is that doesn't mean you have to be 40-30-30 every day the rest of your life, because one thing I got out of ACSM, especially the Olympic Training Center information brought in, which is how much they change these ranges by the day. If you really want to optimize this, look at what your training load is or your metabolic needs on a given day. And for example, if I want to go ride my bike Saturday, that 40% carbohydrate probably isn't going to be enough. I'm going to have to bump that up a little bit, right? And I might regulate my fat down a little bit, maybe even my protein down a little bit. And then on my recovery days, I'll bring my protein back up a little bit, my carbohydrates back down after I refuel post-ride. And so that's how you can fine-tune this.
Yeah, I think I've noticed a lot of people who kind of have it right. Again, it's about that macronutrient timing, mm-hmm. and the macronutrient ratios, mm-hmm. and really understanding what 30% of of 1600 calories really looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I refer a lot of people to some of the online services that do the work for you when it comes to analyzing your food. You know, is it 3 ounces or 4 ounces or 6 ounces of this or that? And what does that equate to? And how did you set up your little meal that is 350 calories total?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can look at, I know it sounds like a kind of a lot of work to do, but you still should have some respect to go ahead and do that and take the time to learn about what that looks like. Because when you do put your meals together, like once you figure that out, you mm-hmm. can say, okay, well, I was kind of off a little bit on this, so I can make this small adjustment and just up my fat side a little bit or whatever it is you need to do. But you need to know what, you know, 25% in almonds look like if that's all you got
right
for the day. And it's a pretty interesting, you know, educational tool to, you know, analyze your food.
There's some cool apps out there you've turned us on to, like a little smartphone apps you can get. You can plug in your portion sizes and it'll print you off or give you a data report on kind of a plate pie chart, if you will. Like, oh, here's my percentages and here's my grams of this and that. You want to mention a couple of those?
Yeah, livestrong.com is one that's, I think, is very user-friendly. I think another app is called Lose It, and they're very similar. You know, you can put in, you know, what you can have the search window, and you can put in an apple, and it'll tell you what's in that apple. And a lot of people think that nuts are protein. Of course, they do have a lot of protein for a nut, you know, but they really fall in a fat category. So they start putting the two and two together and are able to, you know, classify what a macronutrient is easier. And that's been a really helpful thing, I think, for a lot of people.
Christine Clark was at ACSM. She's a very high-level registered dietitian from Penn State. She was talking about MyPlate. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, that's off of the Live Strong, though.
Oh, okay. Okay, I didn't know. So I just
I'm pretty sure.
I'm looking at my notes here.
Yeah, so if you go to livestrong.com, you can create a profile.
Okay.
It's free.
Yeah.
And it's called, I think it's called MyPlate.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
we're talking about the same thing then.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, so, you know, if you talk about, you know, our show last week was manipulating macronutrients, and we'll have to get more into that because I don't think we talked quite enough about that. But that means, you know, that percentage of protein, carbohydrate, fat will change potentially by the day or at least in a period of training if I'm training really hard. And for the average person, probably won't be as much variation if you're doing the same thing every day, day in, day out. But if you're doing something extensive on the weekend, you might have to bump those percentages around a little bit. So they won't be always 40-30-30 or always a set percentage, but they can change a little bit. And they talked a lot about playing with those at ACSM and really manipulating those depending on what the person is doing, even for people in the general public, not just our Olympic athletes. But I thought that was cool. So they're learning how to better move this stuff around instead of being so concrete with it.
Right. I think I always refer to calories as you have your day off calories and you have your day on calories.
Right.
You know, on my day off, I don't have the demand.
Mm-hmm.
I still tend to eat kind of the same way. I just don't eat as much.
Mm-hmm.
And but still, you still have to know how much you should be getting.
Right.
And, you know, and not back so far off that, you know, you're not giving yourself what you need for that recovery day
because mm-hmm.
that's what your day off is.
Another thing about protein is the satiety, the feeling of fullness, right? If you we were joking about this last week with Greg Hottinger, the RD that works with us here at the Lean Berets, and he said, "Yeah, remember those days when we go to get the big thing, orange juice and the bagel, and you know, and no protein whatsoever, right?" So the idea is to mix those carbohydrates, fats, and proteins, and if you get a little protein at your meal, each meal, ideally, right, you'll feel full, and you can last longer, right, and not be starving. And then, of course, you know, there's this whole thing about when you get too hungry, then you eat too fast, and you overeat. But they did spend some time talking about backloading, and the upper limit of bioavailability with protein looks to be about 25 or 30 grams per meal, and anything in excess of that, you can create some backloading issues where you really won't metabolize it properly. So they discuss that a little bit too. So trying to, in other words, if you've got X amount of grams of protein you want to eat per day, you don't want to like try to eat it all at dinner, right? You want to evenly distribute those protein portions out throughout the day, and that's going to help optimize your blood sugar and your recovery and all kinds of things, right?
Right. One of the things that I help people do, if I'm going to suggest a protein guideline to them, I will just take whatever their number is and divide it by their meal frequency,
mm-hmm.
or a suggested meal frequency. So
okay.
if you need 125 grams of protein in the day, like I do,
mm-hmm.
I'll take 25 grams at the most,
mm-hmm.
Per meal.
Right.
So it gives people
better... That's exactly what we're just saying.
Yeah. So it's a nice way to utilize, again, the information from a hydrostatic test to...
And if you're a super light person, like, you know, you're a woman that's, I don't know, 9,500 pounds or something, you know, that might drop down as low as I was reading, like 15 grams per dose. So, you know, it's going to vary a little bit by body weight. Good. Would you mind discussing, like, your weight and versus the grams of protein that you need, just so people can kind of get an idea?
Right. Well, the BMI index would love for me to be about 122 or 25 pounds, but I weigh closer to 140.
Uh-huh.
I'm like typically around 138. And but I've got about 118, at most 120 pounds of lean mass,
mm-hmm.
which requires quite a bit of protein.
Right.
And, you know, my sport demands a lot of calories to do. We try and swim at least 3,000 every time we swim,
mm-hmm.
and that's not honestly all that much in the swimming world, but it's a good maintenance type of thing, and we make it count. So,
right.
And I feel it for, you know, you have that residual
mm-hmm.
Workout feeling that, okay, I did something. I need to make sure that I fuel up for the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm.
But I take about 125 grams of protein a day.
Okay.
And in all the various forms, I mean, I always like to pre-cook a lot of my protein sources, like chicken. I'll cook up eight chicken breasts and I'll eat on those for days.
Okay.
You know, well, not days, but
at least
a couple days. And, you know, I've got some other supplements that I do and plenty of eggs and,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I'm not very afraid of calories, but I do make sure that I exercise. If I don't, then, you know, you start adding weight.
Right, and that, you know, one of the first point you mentioned on that lean profile we developed together was your leanest people exercise every day.
Consistently,
year after year.
Pretty much creatures of habit.
Yeah, let me kind of rattle that off because it's kind of interesting. So her, you know, 10,000 plus people, I talked to her for a few weeks, took a lot of notes down, and I came up with a one-page summary of basically what her leanest people look like over time. Because remember, she tests people more than once usually. You know, every few months she'll retest. So she's got a lot of data points on folks, many of the folks that she's tested. They exercise every day. They eat about 40-30-30, 40% being carbohydrate, 30% protein, 30% fat. They don't skip meals, so they're going to eat 5 or 6 times a day. Some surprising things that I hadn't heard before, but interestingly enough, when I went to ACSM, that's what they were talking about. They don't eat much fruit, but they eat a lot of vegetables. And they talked about the importance of doing a better job with glycemic index. So in other words, if you're eating a high glycemic index diet, and let's say you're eating a lot of fruit, and it's even organic fruit, right? But that fruit is high in the glycemic index. And one of the dietitians I've been working with mentioned, you know, a lot of the people I have that have the hardest time losing weight eat a lot of fruit, even though fruit's healthy. So that was interesting to me because, you know, you try to encourage people as a wellness coach to eat fruit and vegetables, and it's easier to eat fruit generally than a vegetable because it's more of a grab-and-go kind of a food. But you know what? I've got to look at the research and what's not just the research, but what's happening with real people on the street. And it appears to be that the people that are eating more vegetables and less fruit, I didn't say no fruit, please let me qualify that, you know, less fruit, mostly vegetables, mostly lean protein, are doing a better job managing weight. And they also drink plenty of water.
That's right.
And that was kind of the summary of what I got out of talking to you.
Right. One of the things I like to talk to with about with the people that come through my tank are prioritizing your carbohydrates and helping them identify the three main types. You know, you've got grains and fruit and vegetables. And I try to get them to surround their world, and I'm holding my hands up in the air right now and creating a big circle with them. That should be mostly vegetables.
Right.
And then if you put your thumb and your finger together and make another circle, that's your fruit world.
Right.
And then your grains should be, they're included. I've never said either that right. grains are not good. Mm-hmm. Of course they're good. They're everywhere. Mm-hmm. But just to prioritize your carbohydrates and put vegetables first, fruit second, and grains last.
Yeah.
And that's what my leanest people do. They don't say, oh, I'm going to have a sandwich with something in the middle. You know, they say, oh, I'm going to have a piece of chicken and I'm going to have some nuts with it on a big plate of salad, lettuce, right?
That's interesting because that, you know, Nana Meyer, she's the registered dietitian for the Olympic Training Center. She was making a joke. She went to the casino. We were in Vegas for the conference and she went to get a turkey sandwich and she said there was so much bread on it, she had to strip a lot of the bread off. And she goes, I don't need that much carbohydrate load, right?
Right.
And basically, she was saying the same type of thing. So anyway, that's kind of what the leanest people look like. And what are the results of eating these higher protein diets? Not high, but higher than we're used to seeing. If we exceed, and this comes from the research notes I have from American College of Sports Medicine Summit last week. If we exceed the RDA normal recommendations for protein, what we're seeing now with emerging research is that we have more optimal prevention of cardiovascular disease and diabetes. We have better management of weight in terms of getting body fat down. We have optimized bone density. We're doing a better job not just maintaining lean body mass, but hopefully maybe even adding some. We're feeling fuller longer at meals because we're getting a little protein distributed throughout the day. We're optimizing our recovery. Again, these are all benefits of having a little bit higher protein intake. We're doing a better job managing blood glucose, you know, because we've changed the glycemic index a little bit. And there's some emerging research out of UCLA I heard about talking about renal failure. So if people have kidney problems and they're realizing that maybe we've done a disservice to those patients by limiting their protein so much. You know, so all kinds of, I mean, again, you know, half the research on proteins come out since, been published since 2000. So there's a lot of new stuff out there, right?
That's right.
But I want to talk, you know, that's kind of the official stance, but I want you to tell just a couple of your stories too, and results from the street. You know, I like the street level stuff, so the lean braise. We like to know what works with real people when we're not around. So, you know, what have you seen the last few years with just different groups and companies?
Well, of course, I see so many varieties of people coming through. I mean, I do have some, you know, elite athletes that come through. It's a very small percentage, honestly. And they learn something. You know, they say, why would I even bother doing this?
Right.
And, you know, so I'll help them understand that, hey, you know, you can dial in your nutrition a lot better for performance nutrition, which...
Right.
You know, for anybody, to me, performance nutrition just means that you're going to perform as a human body better. And it's not just to be an athlete, you know, which, you know, anybody would benefit from that. But, you know, I have a lot of people who are really big that come through the door, you know, and it's a sad place, but they're eager to learn. And I see some really amazing things through with them. Typically, they always have this extraordinary amount of lean mass. So they've already got the engine in the car.
We need to pause in that a minute because this is something I think a lot of people don't realize. Let's say you got somebody coming in that's 300, 350, 400 pounds. You know, if they're still getting up, going to work, and doing their kind of normal stuff, they've got some mass in their legs to move that much weight, right? And we have to factor that. You put them on a 1,200 calorie diet. I mean, we don't want to lose that muscle that they need so desperately to fuel their metabolism, right?
That's right. I mean, their resting metabolic rate is typically quite big. I mean, it matches their lean mass. So, you know, when they start eating a little bit more because they tend to do the knee-jerk reaction. They pull way back. They hardly eat anything. And you're thinking to yourself, you know, I look at them, they're big. Mm-hmm. They must be eating all the time. They can't control their food. And it's like, oh, I beg to differ, because they typically have iron will and they just don't eat.
Hmm.
And this is what I tend to see. And, you know, and when our test kind of gives them permission to go ahead and eat a little bit more, but I heavily caution them to learn about the calories behind the food they're taking in, and to actually document it and learn about their food. Mm-hmm. And that's really been helpful for those people. Now, on the other spectrum, I have some other people that come in who are a normal size body,
mm-hmm.
and they have a very high body fat percentage. And unfortunately, some of them are vegetarians, mm-hmm. so they struggle to get some of the whole proteins going on in their own diet. Even though their food quality is excellent, they're lacking protein intake.
So this is a real health issue, because just being skinny doesn't mean you're healthy, right? And that's what we're talking about. You can be, I mean, some people call it skinny fat. I mean, they appear at a glance across the street to be lean, but when you get closer, you realize they're not lean. They're skinny, but they don't really have a definition. They don't have a lean mass or a tone to them, right?
Well, they're under-muscled and over-fat in a normal-sized body.
Right.
And they can suffer from the same things that a big person would, like high blood pressure and diabetes and heart disease and all of the things that are associated with too much body fat. So I actually have a very close friend who just was recently diagnosed as a diabetic, and she's, to me, she's she's definitely a normal sized person, not athletic at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's a real struggle for her, because she tends to go a long time without eating, which of course for a diabetic is
You know, blood sugar is off the chart.
That's right. And they have, you know, now she's becoming insulin dependent. It's a real mess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but you know, for people to come through the tank and to realize that their body composition is far more important than that, the number on the scale alone,
the overall weight. Yeah,
that's right.
Right.
They start making the connection with, hey, you know, I've got a much more important side of my body. Of course I need some body fat. It's very important for our life, but my lean mass is everything to my health. And if I can feed it just enough food to function in the day, then I am going to be, operating at a much more healthy level. I'm going to not have issues with things sort of related to too much body fat. And so I've got, you know, a whole variety of people that come through my tank who demonstrate all these different scenarios. But, you know, and of course I can tell when people skip meals, they may be a normal sized body and they're under muscled and over fat, as an example. And that's because they don't eat very much food and they go a long time without eating. Then I've got the overeaters that come through and they just simply take in too many calories and they know it.
Yeah.
You know, and good, bad, ugly, whatever it is.
They're just eating too much.
Yeah, they're just eating too much. So they need to, you know, dial in on that, but not react so heavily on pulling back so hard on the calorie intake.
Right, right.
You know, it's like, you know, learning respect for what that food is actually worth is, you know, one of my main points with people. I try to really get them to start looking at that. And those that do, the next time they jump in my tank, they typically have an improvement just through awareness.
And you've told me that you've actually seen people make a pretty significant shift in a month or two.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Which is really encouraging. I mean, I think, you know, I want to drive the point home on this show. This is really good news. What we're talking about is really good news. I mean, as a wellness coach, I'm going to tell you, you know, with a fitness background, I try to do as much as I can with fitness. But, you know, 80% of this game with weight or more is about what you're eating or what you're not eating. I wish I could exercise off all this extra weight in the country, but it doesn't work that way. So when I realize that with just healthier nutrition in terms of the new science coming out and how we can play with these macronutrient ranges, that I might be able to help my clients better manage getting that fat weight down to prevent some of these diseases and feel better and optimize recovery if they're an exercising or athletic type person, And it's all really good news. But the last couple of minutes, this leads us into a little subtopic point I wanted to mention about people that have some of the gastric bypass type surgeries. And one of the dangers and concerns that health professionals have over that is that, yes, you can lose a lot of weight really fast. But remember, we're putting weight in quotes, right? And we want to ask now, what kind of weight are you losing? Well, obviously, you're losing some fat weight, but you're going to lose a lot of lean mass. And that can create some real metabolic disasters in terms of you not having enough of an engine to optimize your health in the years to come, right?
Yeah, I've had more recently some of these weight loss surgery people come through my tank. And
well, in LA, it's like it's the rage. I mean, there's a billboard every quarter mile, it seems like, for some kind of, you know, lap band or whatever, you know.
Yeah, 1-800-GET-THIN or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, oh, it's ridiculous, you know.
Well, what's sad is that I have these very people come through and they're very excited to get into the tank and to see how much fat that they've lost. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a pretty sad outcome, honestly. You know, mm-hmm. they get in and yeah, they've lost 150 pounds, which is amazing, mm-hmm. right? But mm-hmm. you look at their number and their number is still 42% or
body
higher.
Fat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, they lost, you know, they sloughed off their muscle.
Right. So they lost a lot of overall weight, but their body fat percentage really hasn't changed a whole lot. It's still too high.
That's right. And it's only because they are calorically restricted.
Right.
They can only take in a certain amount of food at any given time. And by the end of the day, they still didn't get any food in them.
Right.
So if they ate 8 or 10 times a day, they might be able to do it. But their whole point was not to have to do that.
Right. And from an exercise perspective, it's really tricky because, you know, if I get them in any kind of metabolic type training that requires a decent amount of calorie turnover, or a hydration is an issue if we're exercising outside, going for a hike in the heat or something, it's almost impossible for them to keep calorie balanced and hydrated. And so it's just, it's frustrating to me because we're very, very limited after they get that procedure done as to what we can do.
Well, and their desire is so big to be smaller.
Right, but smaller at any cost, as we pointed out when we started the show, isn't necessarily optimizing your health, right?
Mm-mm.
And I hope that people listening get that point today. It's not about losing weight. If you are overweight, it's about, you know, getting that body fat weight down and then adding some lean muscle.
Right. And honestly, it's about getting a good baseline measurement first.
Yeah.
And having a real picture of where you're at before you say, okay,
do anything.
Here's what
yeah.
I need to do.
Yeah, because you can go crazy with these website estimators and they could have you off hundreds of calories a day and dozens of grams a day on protein and macronutrients, and it could actually end up hurting you. That's been our show. I mean, it's been fascinating. You know, we went into the hydrostatic weighing, and it's a gold standard, and especially with a digitized system like Linda's using, bodyfattest.com, and the importance of that lean mass. I really hope you get the point, man. We want to maintain that muscle and maybe even add some because that factors into what we're learning now about how to better manage weight and health. It's not just weight, but I'm talking about overall health here. And that was really driven in with the top registered dietitians that I have a lot of respect for last week at the conference that I attended. And getting that protein balance, you know, we can talk about net protein balance where, you know, whatever protein or, muscle degrading you're doing each day, you're meeting that protein need, but you're not exceeding it, so you're not going to add any muscle. You know, it might be maintaining what you've got, but, you know, for most people, they probably need to add a little muscle. So if you're not eating properly, that's not going to happen. You can be in the gym 8 hours a day, and if you don't have enough protein, you're not going to build any muscle, right? That's called synthesis, right? Or you're being anabolic, technical term there, by adding muscle. And protein research, we covered that. I mean, a lot of the research today has been done just since 2000, so we really have to get on board with what's coming out. And these new ranges you want to put on your radar screen, the AMDR, Acceptable Macronutrient Distribution Range, but basically it means your protein's going to vary from 10 to 35%. Even Weight Watchers is using up to 35% for total caloric intake and protein. Fat's going to range 20 to 35%, carbohydrates you know, 45 to 65. Again, play with those ranges depending on your load. And good things can happen when you have the right protein, the right calories coming in. You're meeting and exceeding your resting metabolic rate. And a lot of great information today. And Linda can be reached in her company at bodyfattest.com. Her email address is linda@bodyfattest.com. And you can reach her and her colleagues around the country. There are two treks in Southern California, right?
Yeah, there's two of us in Southern California. There's four of us here in the state of California. But we're in about 10 different states now. Our newest one is in Austin, Texas, and
cool.
Denver, Colorado.
Cool. Well, if you have an opportunity, I know I've got a great friend, Delaine Ross in Atlanta, and she had one of your treks come in. And I read some of her posts on Facebook about what her clients have had. One of them was 60-plus years old, and he had a dramatic turnaround. That first month or two was amazing what happened when he dialed in. And so it's pretty exciting, and I think it's kind of new stuff out on the edge a little bit, the way you guys are doing it. And I think it's going to help a lot of people, and already has. We're just trying to get the word out.
Thanks a lot, Ron.
Hey, we'll be doing more with you for sure. So thanks for being on the Lean Braise today.
Yeah, thank you.
You've been listening to Lean Braise Radio Show at theleanbraise.com. Music today provided by Van Halen Army. Until next time, keep your foot in the accelerator for rock and stay fit. Leanbraise.com.